This is the Josh Hammer Show.
You know, I really wanted to come out swinging today on anything other than this Nazi-esque, Hitler Youth-esque barbarism currently tearing America's university campuses apart. But we have to open with that because it actually just is that insane. What is happening right now on America's universities, I would submit to you, is worse than anything that you might have read about back from the late 1960s. Sure, you probably read about how in the late 60s at Kent State in Ohio and universities like that, there were all sorts of Vietnam War protests. They were protesting the policies of the Lyndon Johnson administration and then the Nixon administration after that. But they were protesting foreign policy decisions of the Washington, D.C. Uniparty. That is not different in degree. That is different in kind than what we are currently seeing right now. What we are currently seeing right now is not a protest against a foreign policy decision. That is what it looks like, perhaps, to the cursory viewer, someone who is just flipping through the cable news and sees a chyron in the lower third, anti-Israel protesters. You're missing the story if that is what you think is happening right now. The story is so much bigger than that. Sure, these people obviously do hate Israel. They have been indoctrinated by their critical theory. They've been indoctrinated by what is now known as MENA, Middle East and North Africa studies, these academic pseudo fraudulent departments that are overrun with anti-Western, anti-Jewish, anti-Christian, and pro-Islamism sympathies. That, yes, they absolutely do hold those beliefs. But what is also going on, you had a Jewish student at Yale University shoved in the eye with the flagpole from a PLO flag, the terrorist flag of the Palestine Liberation Organization, the modern-day incarnation of the Nazi swastika, even if our elites don't treat it as that. That girl was rushed to the hospital. Earlier this week at UCLA, a Jewish girl was pummeled unconscious, had a concussion, was rushed to the hospital. Also at UCLA, you saw a different Jewish student who was blocked out from entering the library because he had the temerity to wear a Star of David necklace and was therefore a nefarious Zionist who can't access the library. UCLA, like many of these other schools, has decided they are going to hold classes for the rest of the semester online. And what about Columbia? I mean, Columbia is the epicenter of all of this. This is where this latest outburst of shenanigans started 2.5 weeks ago or so, contemporaneously with the university president, Menashe Shafik, testifying in Congress, where, to give her a modicum of credit, she failed to fall down the rabbit hole of Claudine Gay and Liz McGill and did say that she condemned calls for the genocide of Jews, although her actions after that do not match her rhetoric that she said to Elise Stefanik and House Republicans. At Columbia, this all reached its apex this past Tuesday evening. It was hours after the students violently smashed windows at Hamilton Hall, a well-known iconic building on Columbia's campus, and infiltrated it like the vermin they are, held a janitor inadvertently hostage who was working a late-night shift, unfurled the PLO flag, unfurled a sign that says Intifada. You had some dweeby transgender-looking PhD in poetry who got out there wearing her pro-terrorist kaffiyeh, demanding that they be delivered their DoorDash meals. Limousine jihadis for you in its purest form. By the way, this poetry PhD, if you actually go to her to her page online, she's studying Marxist poetry. And that kind of gives away the game here. What do the Marxists love and what do they hate? Well, the Marxists hate Western civilization. They hate the very tenets and underpinnings upon which the Judeo-Christian West is built. Rule of law, the Westphalian nation-state system, national sovereignty, due process, individual rights. Agree to disagree. The hegemonic woke mentality has no countenance for such niceties. They will not let you dissent. You will be made to bend the knee. In a situation like this, we are not dealing with so-called free speech. Free speech is a system wherein interlocutors talk to one another and try to reason with one another within the confines of something remotely approximating decent and civil human behavior. Shouting at a Jew, "Go back to Poland, you dirty Jew," or blocking the library from Zionists, however you purport to identify a Zionist. There are a lot of Christian Zionists, for instance. That is not speech. That is vile and appalling conduct that is legally and morally distinct from speech, especially on private university campuses, which are not necessarily held to the same First Amendment standards, but even on public university campuses, it is distinct. Here in Florida, where I live, the president of the University of Florida, Ben Sass, to his great credit, has been adamant on this. They released a very straightforward statement when the encampment there started up. This is not daycare. They threatened to expel students and fire faculty for engaging in these shenanigans. But ultimately, the Jews and the Jewish state are only the canary in the coal mine. As I was getting at with that Marxist harpy, that kafia-wearing, transgender-looking moron at Columbia who was demanding the limousine liberal DoorDash, this isn't ultimately about the Jews. At Harvard University, there is an American flag that prominently flies over one of the statues on campus. I believe it's of John Winthrop, the 17th century founding father of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. They tore down the American flag, these miscreants, these ingrates, and hoisted the PLO flag in its place. At University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, they did the same thing. They started to tear down Old Glory. The chancellor of UNC went in to put it back up, and they were pelted by these so-called protesters. This one heroic fraternity there at UNC Chapel Hill protected Old Glory for 30, 60 minutes while enduring all sorts of hurled items from these so-called protesters. They were there to protect the stars and stripes, the American flag. These are modern-day heroes. So too with the NYPD, the folks who actually went into Hamilton Hall at Columbia to evacuate the hostage, the janitor, from these Ivy League miscreants and the professional agitators and Soros Rockefeller Fund funded miscreants who were there teaming up with the students. All of this obviously is orchestrated primarily by George Soros and the Rockefeller Fund. It ultimately is about destroying America and destroying Western civilization. That is the aim. The pamphlet that went out at the University of Michigan from the so-called pro-Palestinian protesters about a week and a half ago gave the game away. It said, "Freedom for Palestine means death for America." How else to interpret throwing rocks and water bottles at the American flag? These people have been so indoctrinated by civilizational self-hatred for years and years, decades really, in the academy. Higher education at this point is an enemy of the people. It is an enemy of the people, not deserving of your taxpayer dollars, not deserving of your respect, and God forbid, not willing of your donation money or your students ultimately matriculating there as well.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
So that raises the obvious question, what can be done? What can be done at this inflection point in American history where you have many jihadists, many Nazi sympathizers running rampant across the American university campus, trying to tear down not just our ally Israel, but as we just discussed, ultimately tear down this country as well? Well, the first is what we were just discussing. Higher education and all public support for it, it has to go. Simply saying that you will stop subsidizing people to go major in absurd degrees like lesbian dance theory and whatever else garbage is peddled in liberal arts colleges these days, that is necessary but insufficient. You have to go a heck of a lot further than that. There has been some good legislation proposed in recent years by folks like Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas, who's been one of the tips of the spear of the defund higher ed movement, to the extent that it's a movement there on Capitol Hill. Senator Cotton has proposed taxing the crap out of certain endowments for universities that have these prolific endowments, universities like Harvard, Yale, Princeton, Columbia. And then the question arises, what can you do with those endowments? Well, on the one hand, you might be able to redistribute it to trade schools for people to go actually learn a useful craft, unlike what they're learning in college these days, whether it is carpentry or plumbing or to be an electrician, something like that. Or you could also redistribute it to schools that actually protect free speech as free speech is traditionally understood, which again is reasonable civil discourse, not enacting an Islamic state that would make ISIS proud on your godforsaken campus. But again, none of this goes far enough either. We're dealing with a situation here where a lot of these folks, whether they are students or outside agitators, are not even necessarily U.S. citizens. Now, obviously some of them are, but a lot of folks come here to study on a visa. And it is worth bearing in mind that the U.S. Supreme Court has consistently held that for folks who are here on a visa who are not yet citizens of this country, you do not necessarily have the exact same constitutional rights that the rest of us have. This has been affirmed repeatedly. You can exclude, for example, aliens, both illegal and legal, from voting, from serving on juries, from working as police officers, probation officers, from owning a firearm, things like that. In fact, it is black letter law in this country that if you are here on a visa, you actually have no right to be here at all. 8 U.S. Code Section 1201 makes it very clear that a visa can be revoked, quote, at any time, at the pure, quote, discretion of State Department officials. Now, obviously asking the Tony Blinken-led State Department to start deporting these little jihadis and Hamasniks on campus, you know, maybe it won't go anywhere, but they can. And at a bare minimum, you should be pushing your public officials to do that. to do exactly that. So that would be at least one step. There are all sorts of other criminal and civil statutes that seem to me to be directly relevant here. So in 1871, there was a sprawling statute passed called the Ku Klux Klan Act, which was passed in response to exactly what it sounds like, which was the Klan running wild in what was then the beginning of the Jim Crow South, trying to deprive black voters and Catholics and various other minorities of the rights that they had just been awarded due to the 15th Amendment that guaranteed the right to vote and so forth. Now, the Ku Klux Klan Act has various parts. Section 1983 is probably the most famous of them, but for our purposes, there's another section called Section 1985, which creates a civil cause of action for anyone victimized by someone else who, quote, conspire or go in disguise for the purpose of depriving any person of the equal protection of the laws or of equal privileges and immunities under the laws, where another person is injured in his person or property or deprived of having exercised any right or privilege as a citizen of the United States. Basically, it creates a civil cause of action if you have been subject to a conspiracy to have your civil or constitutional rights infringed. This is actually the same cause of action that the Biden administration used to go after Douglas Mackey, the guy who did those memes back in 2016. He was sentenced to jail time for these memes that were telling Hillary Clinton voters to text here to vote. They prosecuted him under this statute. It was 1985 or 1986. They're very similar statutes there. One other idea, you have 18 U.S. Code Section 241, which is a criminal statute that a prosecutor can bring, prohibits conspiring to, quote, injure, oppress, threaten, or intimidate any person in the free exercise or enjoyment of any right or privilege. Okay, so you get the idea. It's a very similar statute there. Then you have the possibility of a sprawling class action civil lawsuit under Title VI. Title VI is the portion of the Civil Rights Act passed in the 1960s that deals with protection for students at taxpayer-funded universities. Under Title VI, students cannot be discriminated against at taxpayer-funded universities on account of race, color, national origin, ethnicity, religion, and so forth. In fact, in 2019, the Trump administration interpreted Title VI to include anti-Zionism as a form of anti-Semitism. Surely we are now past the point of a class action Title VI lawsuit. Jewish students across America are having their Title VI suits infringed upon right in front of our eyes, their Title VI rights. Finally, I ask, at what point is a federal prosecutor going to start prosecuting some of these miscreants, some of these disgusting student organizations like so-called Students for Justice in Palestine for material support for terrorism? That's 18 U.S. Code Section 2339. You know, the largest terror financing case in the history of the United States Department of Justice was a 2008 case called the Holy Land Foundation. It was based in the Dallas suburbs, Richardson, Texas. The Holy Land Foundation was found to be essentially a United States front group for Hamas and various other overseas Muslim Brotherhood affiliates. Where is a prosecutor who is working on building the case right now against SJP, Students for Justice in Palestine? Or for that matter, what about the Soros people? What about the Open Society Foundation? The Soros and Rockefeller people, the same people funding the camps that are literally paying professional protesters to show up and set up tents and camps. Does that not count as material support for terrorism? If they are paying them to go on campus and advocate for Hamas, a U.S.-recognized foreign terrorist organization? What we need right now are brave litigators and brave prosecutors, and start to get this ball rolling in earnest. There's going to be a lot of lawsuits now, and we need to start seeing some damages for the sprawling persecution and infringement of civil rights now.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is the Josh Hammer Show.
If the goal of the on-campus jihadists and wokesters is nothing less than the destruction of America and Western civilization itself, then that does raise the obvious question, why this intense focus, even if it is only an ostensible focus, not a real genuine focus, on a tiny state located halfway around the world that's roughly the size of New Jersey? Now, on the one hand, obviously, it has to do with the Jews. It has to do, obviously, with the fact that anti-Semitism on the left goes back at least as far as Karl Marx himself, who was a historically quintessential self-hating Jew, the grandson of an Orthodox rabbi who came to absolutely despise his own religion and said horrific things about the Jews. The left has had an anti-Semitism problem for a very long time. But it's actually deeper than that. In fact, some of you may know, I'm working right now on drafting a book on kind of all of these topics, on not just the Jews, not just Israel, but kind of connecting all of this to the fate of Western civilization. A working title of the book right now is Sinai and Civilization. We might go with Israel and Civilization. The actual title is to be determined. I'm just drafting it right now. But I was talking about this exact topic in my drafting just the other day. I want to read for you. I'll give you guys a sneak preview of the book that, God willing, is to come in under a year's time now. I want to read for you a few paragraphs I wrote just the other night. Intrinsic in the very concept of the nation state is a degree of epistemological humility and restraint. It is perhaps natural if a peoplehood or nationhood is confident in its convictions and beliefs to attempt to forcibly export it unto the broader world. And indeed, this is what empires and tyrannies have done since time immemorial. The Roman Empire is a particularly noteworthy example from classical antiquity, and its zeal for evangelism and subjugation might reasonably be compared and contrasted with the biblical nation-state model when it comes to order to global affairs. Indeed, the restraint of the biblical nation-state model is made all the more impressive by the fact that the ancient Israelites were a covenantal people who had witnessed incredible miracles, such as the splitting of the Red Sea during the Exodus from Egypt. If there's one thing that the contemporary Western left is not, it is humble or restrained. Modern progressivism, which is distinct from the classical live-and-let-live John Stuart Mill-style liberalism of old, is fundamentally predicated upon forcibly exporting its catechism unto the masses. Don't approve of redefining the definition of marriage as it had existed across every major global culture for millennia in order to accommodate same-sex couples? Homophobe! Don't approve of allowing high school-age biological males with male sexual organs still intact changing in women's locker rooms? Transphobe! Don't approve of DEI bureaucracies on university campuses that amount in practice to anti-white racism? Racist. And on it goes. To the modern woke left, tolerance is only permissible for someone else if he toes the line and fully imbibes the tenets of the woke catechism. Dissenters will bend the knee and be homogenized into the left-wing blob. As my friend Eric Erickson memorably put it, in a prescient 2013 blog post and then a book of the same name, quote, you will be made to care. In practice, this amounts to nothing less than intellectual and lifestyle totalitarianism. Perhaps a softer totalitarianism than the Soviet Union's jackboot, but a totalitarianism nonetheless. The European Union, the United Nations, and the Great Reset of the World Economic Forum are all real-world examples of this. Contemporary progressivism, globalism, and forcible homogeneity are all signs of the same noxious coin. It logically follows then that for the ardent progressive or aspiring globalist, the particularist, fiercely nationalist, distinctly Jewish state of Israel is such a bete noire. If one's goal is to ultimately dismantle the Westphalian nation-state system and reach a borderless, universalist utopia, a la the World Economic Forum's Great Reset, it makes sense to focus disproportionately on the world's only Jewish state. It is the only state in the Middle East, after all, stubbornly preventing imperial Islamic rule. What's more, if one's goal is to dismantle contemporary Western Christendom, it makes sense to begin with the religion that helped birth Christianity, Judaism, in the very land where Christianity began. Israel's pride, though, is that it will not, quote, be made to care. Its pride is that, to borrow from William F. Buckley Jr., quote, it stands athwart history yelling stop. It is Israel's witness to particularism and nationalism, its defiance in being, both symbolically and quite literally, the Jew of the nations. It is that that engenders so much of the modern left-wing hatred against it. That is my working theory. If you ultimately hate America, you ultimately hate the West, you ultimately hate the nation-state system itself, because you don't have the restraint and epistemological humility that letting nations act as nations entails, it makes a heck of a lot of sense to focus a lot on what really is kind of the OG nation state, the United Kingdom of Israel under King David in 1,000 years before the Common Era. That is the original template for the nation state. If that is what you're trying to destroy, you could do a lot worse than focusing on Israel. So don't get me wrong. Good old-fashioned anti-Semitism has a lot to do with this focus, but it's also a lot more complicated and nuanced than that. And it is nothing less than the destruction of Western civilization that these disgusting human beings are ultimately trying to get at.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
It's Hammer Time.
The Pentagon won't disclose its diversity training costs, so Congress had required the Pentagon to not only cap the salaries of its DEI personnel, but it also required it to disclose how much they spent on diversity training, so to speak, all throughout the military. And they are not disclosing it. They are not disclosing how much they are spending on their diversity training costs. You know, I have a novel idea for the United States military. And just to provide some further context here, the Pentagon requested almost $115 million for its DEI programs for the fiscal year 2024 after Congress put in this requirement. Look, I've got a novel idea, folks, for the United States military. And the novel idea goes as follows. Militaries exist for the sole and exclusive purpose of hunting down and killing the enemy before the enemy kills you. Literally nothing else matters. You know, to wade into kind of an older conflict, you had the repeal of so-called Don't Ask, Don't Tell, which was repealed during the Obama administration. Now, I don't have particularly super strong thoughts on it. To go back, Don't Ask, Don't Tell was the military's semi-formal, you might say, policy when it came to homosexuality in the military. Obama repealed it. I don't have super, super strong thoughts on that, but if they had valid reasons for thinking that allowing gay Americans to openly serve would actually undermine the coherence and the efficiency and the lethality of a given military unit, which, again, the U.S. military is disproportionately comprised of folks from the South and Midwest, typically a little bit more right-leaning backgrounds, a little higher percentage white American than you get in the general populace. If there were reasons, valid empirical reasons, for keeping that policy, then it should have been kept. And that's the exact same way, obviously, when it comes to so-called DEI throughout the military as well. We all remember Mark White Rage Milley and all the insane crap that he was saying from his perch at the Joint Chiefs of Staff just a few years ago, how he was assigning Ibram X. Kendi, anti-racism, all this far-left academic garbage in the military. You know, militaries that go down this route, it's typically a quick path to societal and civilizational ruin. Maybe we should grant the lefties the ability to do whatever they want on some of their campuses when it comes to very, very, very far left jurisdictions. But for God's sake, you utterly debased people, do not touch the United States military. We need that military, and it should be astoundingly obvious. I really can't believe that we have to talk about something like this. Eight states have sued the Biden administration over new transgender protections under Title IX. So multiple lawsuits that were filed here. So on the one hand, you had Louisiana, Mississippi, Montana, and Idaho filed a joint lawsuit. Then you had the state of Texas under the excellent leadership of Attorney General Ken Paxton that filed its own separate legal action. And then here in Florida, our Attorney General Ashley Moody also filed suit in a lawsuit that was joined by South Carolina, Georgia, and Alabama. So you're getting a lot of red or red-leaning states that are challenging this new transgender guidance from the Biden administration. So to backtrack a little bit here, in 2022, the Biden administration essentially teased that it was going to review the Trump-era interpretation of Title IX. Title IX is the section of the civil rights statutes going back to the early 1970s that was there to combat sexism. It's essentially the feminist component of the nation's statutory civil rights law, you might say. Probably the most famous or infamous, depending on your perspective, way that Title IX is enforced on American university campuses is to require the NCAA to not have more men's varsity sports than women's varsity sports. It's kind of an absurd interpretation of Title IX, but that's the way it's been for at least the entirety of my adult life, the time that I have been following collegiate athletics. And Title IX here has been unilaterally decreed by the Biden administration to encompass not merely discrimination on the basis of sex, not merely disparate treatment on the basis of sex, but also disparate treatment or discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity. And that's the kicker. If this actually were to take hold and the Biden administration's interpretation of Title IX were to become pervasive or ubiquitous in the NCAA, in American collegiate athletics in general, and everywhere that Title IX is the law of the land in all institutions therein, you obviously are looking at nothing less than the complete and utter eradication of women's sports. And in a time like this, where you are seeing red state attorneys general like Ken Paxton in Texas and Ashley Moody here in Florida pushing back against the Biden administration's throwing women under the bus to peddle this vogue, woke, far left agenda when it comes to the transgender ideology, I have to ask myself and ask you, the audience, one question. Where the hell are the old school feminists? Where the hell is Billie Jean King, Martina Navratilova? Now look, some of these people actually, to their credit, have been outspoken. Martina Navratilova, to give her credit, actually has been very outspoken about the need to protect women's sports from the transgender agenda. She wouldn't necessarily phrase it like that, but she actually has been. But, you know, the folks who are out there marching for the ERA, the Equal Rights Amendment, back in the 1970s, you know, back when Phyllis Schlafly and the Eagle Forum were opposing it, you know, where are those old school feminists and their daughters today? I have no idea. In fact, many of the so-called women's organizations now are lining up to a T to support this. The National Organization for Women now being a very prominent example. They are on board. They are on board, institutionally speaking, with the Biden administration's rewriting of Title IX to destroy women's sports. How exactly are you standing up for women? Unbelievable stuff. Well, speaking of transgender and drag, I guess, George Santos is back in drag. Remember George Santos? Well, he recently put on lipstick, a wig, and a red feather boa as he brought out his drag persona for the first time in nearly a decade. He mentioned that after 18 years, he was bringing back his onstage persona, which he calls Kitara. Now, if this sounds like a weird story, that's because it is a really weird story. But at some point after George Santos managed to fraudulently get himself implanted in the United States Congress, someone dug up the fact that, not merely as if it were bad enough that this guy had lied repeatedly on the campaign trail. He had said that he had done a million things, like he was part Jewish. No, he actually wasn't. He had a parent who died in 9/11. No, he actually didn't. He worked for Goldman Sachs. No, he actually didn't. The guy lied a million times. And to this day, I think is probably ultimately going to die in a jail cell at this point. But at some point when he was a congressman, it came out from the intrepid efforts of an investigative journalist that George Santos in a prior life actually was a drag performer. George Santos, of course, is no longer in Congress. He has been literally voted out of the chamber by the United States House after it was clear that he was going to face federal charges for some of these aforementioned fraudulent behaviors there. You know, my take on this is twofold. One is that I ask Republicans, is it really too much to ask to not elect into the United States Congress people who are just epic dirtbags of human beings? I mean, you know, maybe the age of kind of the Jerry Falwell moral majority of trying to hold everyone to a super high ethical standard in office, you know, maybe that fell. Indeed, it probably did fall with Donald Trump in 2016. We probably are past that, and I will readily concede that. But we can simultaneously believe that we have to be a little more prudential in who we're voting for office when it comes to candidates' moral shortcomings. We can simultaneously believe that while also saying that someone like George Santos, with his own personal checkered history, is so far beyond the pale so as to be automatically disqualified. Now, on the other hand, I did actually oppose the vote to expel him. Terms in the U.S. House are only 2 years. The voters were going to decide on this sooner rather than later. If the Republican Party wanted to go down with him at the ballot box, I think they should have had that opportunity. So I disagreed with that. But man, if tomorrow is the day that George Santos goes away forever, that will not be soon enough. Alabama law pushes back against DEI curriculum. So brand new law just signed by the governor of Alabama, Kay Ivey, prohibiting publicly funded institutions from endorsing or mandating DEI programs. It goes into effect October 1st. So we updated you on this a little bit earlier, a few weeks ago or so, where the Alabama legislature had passed this legislation. Now it's been signed into law. Alabama joins a growing number of states such as Florida, Texas, Iowa, Utah, and perhaps some others that are going ahead and actually banning DEI from state universities on campus. Now, interestingly, it's actually getting some pushback, though. So the mayor of Birmingham, Randall Woodfin, he is now calling on black athletes to boycott playing sports at colleges and universities in Alabama. He's basically hoping to crush the state economically, and that will ultimately trigger a repeal. Well, I've got some news for you, Randall Woodfin, the mayor of Birmingham, Alabama. First of all, Birmingham is the largest city in the state of Alabama. Are you that stupid that your plan is to try to economically bankrupt your state, and you somehow think that your city, the largest city in the entire state, will be spared? Or are you so gung-ho and committed to the ideological virtue signaling of the DEI regime and the tenets of the woke catechism that you will actually inflict self-harm to the own working and middle-class people of your city? You will gladly view their lost jobs, diminished wages, and decreased professional opportunities as necessary damage in the crusade to get DEI statewide? Are you actually that committed So that's first of all. Second of all, you know, Alabama has some really good sports programs, last I checked. The Alabama Crimson Tide just made the Final Four in men's basketball. They lost to UConn, although they put up a heck of a fight, actually, in that game. Alabama Crimson Tide football is obviously legendary. So are you really going to tell black people that they can't go play sports for some of these historic programs in Tuscaloosa and Auburn, Alabama, for the Auburn Tigers? You're going to tell them they can't do that because you are so stuck on anti-white racism, which is what DEI structurally amounts to in practice? It's disgraceful stuff. If you are in the Birmingham area listening to the program, make sure you go ahead and get this bum out of office. That can't come soon enough. Finally, Marin County, California library system is rolling out an anti-racism plan. The Marin County Free Library has unveiled this five-year plan. They're essentially paying a design firm in New York City called Margaret Sullivan Studio. They're paying them $100,000. To craft this plan. Here's the money quote from the director of the library there in Marin County, California. Quote, "We focus on communities of color in this plan, which we define as a collective term for non-white individuals who share a common experience." Look, I grew up going to public libraries, actually. I have very, very fond memories, in fact, of going to the old Warner Library in Westchester County, New York, near where I grew up. I even remember the library card that I had. You know, I guess those were innocent times. You know, back when you went to a library to, oh gosh, I don't know, read books, to try to learn, to try to be entertained by children's books, to try to then grow into young adult books, to try to grow into the Hardy Boys and all of these novels that you would read when you got to middle school and high school. At some point, obviously, the libraries, like so many other institutions in America, have been transmogrified into the tips of the spear of an ideological crusade. That's why you have these so-called drag queen story hours in the libraries, and apparently that is why the Marin County Library is now engaging in this five-year so-called anti-racism and equity plan as well. At this point, if you are someone with even a modicum of civilizational sanity living in a far-left county like Marin County, in a far-left state like California, I really just do have to ask, you know, are the pretty views of the Golden Gate Bridge really worth it, guys? I mean, there actually are places across the country that share your values and actually try to implement those values into practice. I consider myself very lucky to live in one of those states here in the state of Florida. I really do think that with absurd actions like this, California is ultimately only going to expedite its mass exodus that it has been experiencing for the past few years. So good riddance to you out there in the state of California, frankly.
This is the Josh Hammer Show.